accustomed to that. We got settled in, you could say, and then that's when everything just turned away. He dragged me into the living room while my mother was in the bedroom. I don't know what she was doing. And he told me, well, he asked me in particular, did anything go on while I was, did anything happen while I was gone? And I asked, well, what do you mean? Keep in mind, I'm only 11 years old, so I have no idea what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. So then he asked me if there was a man that had visited the house. And I said, yes, on more than one occasion, quite often, that man was there, and always at night. And so after that, he just stopped talking to me. He turned around, he rushed the bedroom, he closed the door, and ever since that point, I just heard nothing but screaming.
Wow. You blame yourself for this severed relationship with your dad?
At this point in my life, no. But there were many years throughout my teenage growing years I did blame myself.
That's amazing, Ray. You have an individual who seems to be at times aggressive, and he was intoxicated. You talk about that day very poignantly, and then you talk about a man who introduced you to your first ice cream cone.
Absolutely.
That's an incredible range. That has to be on your mind. And also, too, when you talk about this particular story, it's sort of like the worst day, best day of your life kind of a phenomenon. I know you sort of imply that. And whenever I think about first day or best day, worst day, and I was telling you this before the show, I'm always thinking about the film City Slickers. Came out in 1991, I believe, and with Billy Crystal, Daniel Stern, and Bruno Kirby. And it was a magnificent movie, and it reminded me of something that you just explained. It's a time when they're out of this dude ranch, the three of them trying to bond. They're from New York City, and they want to get out of the country. Jack Palance is in that film as well. Funny, funny film. And they talk, and there are some very serious parts in that film. And one part is when they're playing this friendship game, if you will, and they ask each other the question, what was the best day of your life and what was the worst day of your life? And when they get to Bruno Kirby, who's passed a few years ago, he says, I don't want to play. He said, what do you mean you don't want to play? What kind of a remark is that? We always play these games. What is it? What was your best day and worst day? And they push him. And he says, okay, all right, fine. Okay, here it is. For best day, first day. I'm 14. This is my best day, he says, my best day. I'm 14, my father comes home, and like always, he's drunk. He screams at my mother, and then he screams at my sister, and actually tries to take a smack at her, but he holds back. I tell him to stop. And he walks over to me, he clenches his fist, he rears back as if he's going to punch me. I don't move. I mean, I don't even move a muscle. I don't move a muscle. He stands down, decides not to hit me, he starts to leave the door, and I say to him in a very bold, very assertive voice, I'll take care of my mother and my sister for the rest of my life. And he laughs at me and leaves. Hadn't seen him since. But I've been taking care of my mother and my sister ever since that day. And then they ask him, what's your worst day? And he says, same day.
That's pretty much like my story. Right. The day that my family reunited was the day that we all separated. It was an absolutely life-changing experience.
Amazing. You're listening to So What's Your Story with student teller Ray Oliva and me, your host Hank Rubicek, on KPFT 90.1. Ray, the issue of parenting, guardianship is really urgent in your mind, and I'm reminded of Mitch Albom's reflection in his book entitled For One More Day. He writes, I also believe that parents, if they love you, will hold you up safely above the swirling waters, and sometimes that means you'll never know what they endured, and you may treat them unkindly in a way you otherwise wouldn't. Ray, your images in your last story were pretty powerful, and I just want you to tell us in 30 seconds or so, if you can, what is the essential message of your story? I know it's about parenting, and I know you were talking about this generation, but in your own words, what do you want kids to know if you're talking to the kids out there, what do you want them to know, and what do you want them to have learned from your story?
I want them to know that if you're going through the same thing, if your parents are separating or they're divorcing, and unfortunately you so happen to be in the middle of what is going on, I want you to know that there is a very simple and sometimes huge difference between knowing you're at fault and thinking you're at fault. I want you to really look inside yourselves, and if there is even the slightest bit of doubt that whatever's going on is not your fault, then sometimes, I would say 9 times out of 10, I would say that you are absolutely right. But it's knowing 100% that it is your fault. That's the only way you will know. But if you feel, if you ask yourself many, many times, is it me? Am I the reason my parents are splitting up? Chances are, you are not the reason, and I want you to know that.
Wow, that's amazing. That really is. You know, it's only 6:13 in the morning, and you've already, I think, opened our eyes to a lot of things. I wanted to compliment what you just said with something. I knew you were going to talk about this. In the book entitled 700 Sundays by Billy Crystal, it's a story about his dad. And I wanted to read this section to our listeners, because I think that you're going to find this to be especially applicable to you, but I think we're all going to like this. This was the day of his father's funeral, Billy Crystal's funeral, father's funeral. And he likens his father's funeral to his father's favorite thing, which was his car. Okay, and this is typical Billy Crystal humor style. Let me just read this to you. The next day, the strangest thing happened. The car wouldn't start. The gray-on-gray Plymouth Belvedere refused to go. He had driven this car 100 miles a day every day for the last several years, and he loved it. He took perfect care of it. It never failed him until this day, the day that he died. I guess it knew that it was gone, and it refused to go on without him. See, this car just stood in the driveway with the hood up. And Stan, the serviceman from the local gas station, was trying to start it. He and Dad had worked on the car for years together, and Nellie before that, and they'd kept it running perfectly. He was a stocky guy with blonde hair, blue eyes, a jumpsuit, his name written all over his heart. He always had a smile and a big hearty laugh, but now Stan had tears in his eyes as he tried to jump the battery, and the battery wouldn't take the jump. He kept trying over and over again. I stood on the grass watching. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I started having flashes of what I imagined happening to my dad. The night before, in the bowling alley, as the medical people worked on him trying to get him started too. The images swirling together through my mind, paralyzing me with their vivid intensity. Everybody back! Clear! And I'd see my dad not breathing. The car not starting. Clear! The battery was not taking the charge. Stan crying. Try it again! Someone pounding on Dad's chest. Clear! People holding Mom back as she screams, no, 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 clear! And as Stan towed the Belvedere away, the grill of the car looked sad. What do you think of that?
Wow. I mean, it's an inanimate object, and yet how it all fits in, that's incredible.
Yeah. It's an amazing range, though, the scope of how we feel about our parenting and the kind of analogies that we draw. And I think about the kind of analogies that you drew and about the range that you offered about your father. Compare that to Louis Anderson, comedian Louis Anderson, and how he felt about his alcoholic father in his diary-laced book, Dear Dad. He says, and I quote, "I learned nothing from you, Dad, except not to be like you. I remember when people were nice to each other. That's something I say in my act, just to say because I feel that I have to. And I thought it's as appropriate to say here. It's probably worth repeating, too. I remember when people were nice to each other." Right? What do you think he's saying to his father there? You don't even know. I mean, I have no idea. You know, I remember many years ago, I used to keep journals because I had my own thing going on with my son, and I wanted very much to improve our relationship. And I used to use journals to do some workshops, and I had a call from a person who ran the Center for Journal Therapy. Her name was Kate Adams, Kathleen Adams. I get a call, and she says, "Hey, I understand you use some journal entries. Narratives about your son, and I really would love to see them." And I said, "Well, they're not up for publication." She said, "Please." Well, she flattered me. It's easy to flatter me. So I faxed a couple to her. She calls me within 30 minutes, and she says, "I need these in the chapter entitled Fatherhood, in a book entitled Mightier Than the Sword, a book that I want to finish in the next couple of months." I said, "Okay." So I faxed it to her. And she said, or after I faxed it to her, she said, "These are remarkable." And she sent me and the other men who were in this book, it was a book dedicated to fathers, she sent us a round-trip ticket to her book signing in Boulder, Colorado, at a Borders bookstore. So I get to this Borders bookstore, and I'm standing in the stacks with a vanilla latte, listening to this man, a total stranger, about my age at the time, read my entries. And I have to tell you something, it was an incredible situation, because I can't believe anybody had really just somehow captured me and the feeling that I have for my son and what I was going through at the time. And I just found that to be a remarkable situation. You know, Ray, your second story centers on personal challenges. Yes. That was my personal challenge I just wanted to share, but it centers on personal challenges, but indirectly about guidance. Why don't you go ahead and tell us that story, because this is an intriguing one.
This story starts with me in college. I'm all grown, I guess you could say that. I have this whole life ahead of me, new opportunities, new experiences. I moved out. On the first year that I started college as a freshman, I moved out of my mom's house, and I went to live on my own. I did not live on campus. I decided to live off campus. And my first year was excellent. I attended Miami-Dade College, and I went to the Honors College, which is a huge deal over there in Florida. And it just opened up a world of opportunities for me, traveling opportunities, academics, job opportunities, everything and the like. And even the possibility of making numerous friendships. And so this wonderful time in my life had come. And you needed to keep a certain GPA to stay in the Honors College and to keep getting compensated for what you were doing. And I was able to do that the first three semesters I was there. But my last semester was my personal challenge. My last semester was the first semester I finally felt the experience of having a girlfriend. I had never actually experienced having someone there on an emotional level, or even a physical level for that matter. So I wasn't sure how to handle that. I also got a job that semester, so I was trying to balance school, girlfriend, and trying to live alone, trying to feed myself, and at the same time going out with my friends. It was like all the great things that we boys look up to, they all came at once, and it was absolutely overwhelming for me to handle. And so my grades started to drop, and they dropped to the point where I could no longer graduate from the Honors College. I graduated from the college, but not the Honors College. And the dean of our program, she was nice enough to let me walk with my friends that I had made from the Honors College, but I felt like I should have done more. I felt like I should have finished strong. And that is the main thing about this challenge. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And throughout all this time, I know I was at fault, because I know it was my responsibility to handle my business in school. But throughout all that time, I wished and I yearned for either my father or my mother to be there for me and guide me through the process, give me some type of plan so I could try to balance girlfriend, job, school.
The kind of intensity that you use right now is the kind of intensity that parents usually have for kids rather than the other way around. When my son Josh was born, it was magic. Having kids can sometimes make you so crazy that you can't think clearly. A man speaks frantically into the phone. My wife is pregnant and her contractions are only 2 minutes away. And is this her first child? Asks the doctor. No, you idiot, the man shouts. It's her husband. Right? It's a joke. Just a joke. Right? You get that right?
Oh,
it's
okay.
Her husband. Very good.
That's just
you are listening. You're listening to So What's Your Story at KPFT 90.1 with my guest, Raynell Oliva, and I'm your host, Hank Rubicek. Ray, at the beginning of the show, I was talking about the power of students, and I wanted to read something to you. I think all of our listeners are going to really be impressed by this. This is a story, a part story, I should say, a segment from a story that I have permission from one of my students to read. Her name is Bethany, and this is a segment from her narrative about her mother's death. I wanted to get your impression of this. Let me just share this with you. I guess her last days, the days when she was conscious, were the hardest. Her bed was downstairs to make it easier for family and friends to visit her. I remember one morning, early morning, very early in the morning, my great aunt came over along with some cousins. You know what my mother asked me to do? She told me to make some coffee, because no one probably had breakfast. I looked at her. Coffee? You want me to make coffee? I did, but I hated it. I was mad at my relatives for being alive and being able to drink coffee. I was angry with my mother, too. I couldn't believe she wanted me to make coffee because I wanted to spend every moment with her. I made coffee. I heard the dog howl. I went back into the room, and my mother was dead. I think she waited until I left the room to die. I spent 8 years thinking about that day, that moment. I think about it every night. I don't know what to do with it, but I can't let it go.
That's powerful. That's incredible. I think the first thing that comes to your mind is life is too short. But I'm going to go even deeper than that. I think life is unexpected. Mm-hmm. And as a human being, you need to be ready for anything.
Yeah.
And in such an instance, that pretty much says it all. I mean, why wouldn't a mother want to say one last thing?
Yeah.
What sort of relationship did they have?
Yeah.
It makes you wonder.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder about other relationships
yeah.
out there.
All she wanted to do was to go ahead and make coffee, right? So what's your story on KPFT Houston is what you're tuned into as guest Ray Oliva tells yarns of a personal nature with me, your host, Hank Rubicek. Now, let me just offer a tip for telling, if I may, and do a few announcements before we get back to Ray. A short segment on learning to tell a story. We're talking personal narratives this morning. So get your story ideas from ignition keys, like journals, photographs, heirlooms, anything that will detonate those focused, densely detailed episodes of your life. That first kiss on Sally's front porch, when your father came out at the wrong time for you, but the right time for him. Ray, you probably had moments like that with your girlfriend, no? I certainly hope so, yes. The first day at school, when you knew stickers ruled, the night Charlie convinced you your basement was haunted, the despair felt when Tommy broke your heart. And get to the Houston Storytellers Guild monthly story swap, held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House at 18th and Heights Boulevard. HSD is the reason this type of show works. The next meeting is June 18th, so try to get there. Check out our site at www.HoustonStorytellers.org. And if you want to be a guest on So What's Your Story or have a question about how to construct or tell a story, why don't you send me your ideas and questions along with all the essential information to Ruby, ROUBEY.story@gmail. Again, that's Ruby, ROUBEY.story@gmail. And I or one of my student interns, Lauren or Raven, will get back to you. Tell us how stories about parenting can help us become better parents, more compassionate people, right? We have about you know, 30 seconds.
I think you have to listen. You have to listen to the clues. When you hear about personal narratives in regards to parenting, listen to what is being said about the parents and listen to what is being said about the children.
Yeah.
In my case, for example, my dad was the same person that was drunk, but like you stated earlier, he was the first person to give me ice cream, to introduce me to ice cream. And as a child, that's a huge thing. So even though you make mistakes as a parent, as a child, you have to overlook that and honor your parents. Because to this day, I still love my father, no matter what happened to my family.
I appreciate that insight. You know, the novelist Chuck Palahniuk claimed that parents are like God because you want to know they're out there. And you want them to think well of you, but you really only call them when you need something. You know, and that kind of comment, I think, in many ways, sort of punctuates your point. Ray, I can't thank you enough for being here. I told you it would go fast, and this was just a terrific time, a terrific show. Thanks to you. I want to thank you for your courage and your insights. Your stories will, I think, forever be frozen in time. And to all of you out there, I want you to make it a habit. Make it a habit to start your week with, so what's your story, and keep your dial on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and I'm wishing you a safe week, and I want to remind all of you that it is absolutely never too late to live happily ever after. Have a terrific day and a safe one. And we'll see you next Monday morning at 6 a.m.